Welcome. You're listening to Everyday Sublime. This is your host, Josh Summers, and it's always a pleasure to have you here. In this episode, I'm going to share with you a talk from really the first talk of our new training in Yin Yoga and Qi Cultivation. But before I give that talk, I just want to say, if you enjoy these episodes, if you like this podcast, if you're a fan of Everyday Sublime, please leave a review in your favorite podcast player on iTunes, Spotify, or whatever it might be. Please consider sharing an episode with your friend and do subscribe. All these simple actions really help the show, help our work, and we're very much appreciative for your efforts in giving reviews and or sharing with friends. Moreover, if you like the show and you like the themes we're exploring here, consider joining our Riverbird Sangha. The Riverbird Sangha is a guild of teachers and students of Yin Yoga, meditation, and Qigong. We practice together. We talk about practice together. It's an online community of like-minded support for folks in the Yin Yoga world that are looking to deepen and refine their skills of practice and teaching. There's a link for you in the show notes for how you can join. We give you 2 free weeks as a trial membership, and with your membership, you'll receive 50% off on all of our Yin Yoga trainings, which includes the training I'm introducing in this episode. So if you're interested in any of that, do check it out in the show notes. And in this talk, what I'm going to attempt to do is to place in context the role of cultivating our awareness and how essential awareness training is for understanding, developing, and evolving really the process of cultivating our qi or our vital energy. So I hope you enjoyed today's talk and we look forward to hearing from you. Thanks again for sharing with a friend or subscribing or writing a review on your favorite podcast app. We really appreciate all that. I hope you enjoy today's show, and without further ado, here's today's talk, Cultivating the Spirit of Wisdom. So this is the first session of, as you know, this the second module in our course that we're loosely calling Yin Yoga and Qi Cultivation. It's really focusing on how do we cultivate our qi? And this module, which we're calling Refining Metal, the Wisdom of Qi Cultivation, is going to look at a particular dimension. You know, it's a particular lens on the cultivation of our qi. Particularly, it's the lens itself. We're looking at the lens that we examine our and connect to our practice through. And I'll be speaking about that. And if you're all confused, if you saw that we were having 4 sessions and then we added a fifth one, essentially we did the same thing. We made the same mistake we did last time, which is we realized that we want to have 4 practice discussion sessions for each of the chapters, the 4 chapters of this training. But we realized we really do need a gathering introductory session. There needs to be a time that I want to have a time with you where I cover the broad overview of this course and how this course fits in with what you may have done before. And I just want to say too, if you haven't done the first module, the Gathering Earth module, not to worry. Each of these modules are you can take them as standalones. They stand, we really feel that they stand on their own with their own practices and tutorials. And if you decide that you want to learn more about the whole process, then each of the other modules will fill in a respective domain or a respective dimension of the process. So we're calling this the Wisdom of Qi Cultivation. And that sort of begs the question, what do we mean when we refer to the word wisdom? And whenever I think of the word wisdom, I can't help but remember a definition or a reflection on wisdom that the British novelist Evelyn Waugh
wrote in his gothic novel, Brideshead Revisited. He said, "To know and love one other human is the root of all wisdom." To know and love one other human is the root of all wisdom. And you might hear that and you think, hang on, I'm single. Is this going to be a module about, you know, Josh and Terry and what they've learned about each other in their relationship in the last 3 years? No, I want to propose that this knowing one other human in this practice is essentially coming to know ourselves, coming to know ourselves very intimately. And sort of juxtaposed against that definition of wisdom, of knowing one other human, that is ourselves, my friend and sometimes guest on my podcast or other reciprocal, we are reciprocal guests on each other's shows. Robert Wright once said on a show with me, he said, wisdom, if nothing less, is the knowledge, the understanding that can avoid bad outcomes. Knowledge and understanding to avoid bad outcomes. So in my mind, those two quotes, to know, to love and know one other human is the root of all wisdom, and the ability to avoid bad outcomes, those come together with this development of wisdom. And while on one level you could look at what we're emphasizing here is a refinement of self-care, whether it's the self-care of the yoga practices, the self-care of the massage, the self-care of the meditation, the self-care of the qigong. In this module, the dynamics of cultivating wisdom and coming to know and love ourselves in a very close and intimate way, I think involves three broad dynamics. There are three broad phases, or they're really interrelated phases. One being, we harness our energy to attune to what's going on. So there's attunement. That's the first broad phase, attuning to ourselves. And we'll be speaking about how to tune up literally ourselves through the energetic development of the practice. But whenever I've come in tune with things, the more in tune I get, the more attuned I become, the more I often discover that there's a process, a necessary process of atonement, where I atone for misperceptions, misunderstandings, poor relationships, whether it's towards myself or to somebody else. So there's an atonement dynamic. And as it matures, as these processes of attuning and atoning mature, the philosopher and writer Ken Wilber, who uses these phrases, talks about how we can experience the third phase of at-one-ment. So from attuning, there's a play on words here, we attune to what's going on, we atone for misperceptions, misunderstandings, conditions in our heart that cause suffering. And in atoning and healing those, we start to feel more and more at one with things, or at peace, a deep experiential peace with the way things are. So I want to suggest that those are the broad contours of the cultivation of wisdom, which will be refining. That's the operative word in our title, is we're refining wisdom. So refining the capacity of our awareness, we're refining that capacity of awareness to see, to attune to what's happening, to atone for any poor manifestations of relationship, and to begin to more and more experience a unified sense of at-one-ment. So just to now put essentially where, you know, where we've been, if you took the first module, I just want to sort of summarize what we've been emphasizing and talk about how we'll be using the tools that we introduced in the first module and refining them in this module. So in this, the Friday sessions, you'll see that we refer to our practice now, and if you're a member of the Sangha, you've seen this name change. We're loosely referring to our yin yoga practice or our evolution of our yin yoga practice as the yin practice sublime. And that's an attempt to kind of merge the concept of our practice with the concept of the podcast, Everyday Sublime. But it's really this yin practice sublime is an integrative practice that weaves together the foundational approach of yin yoga with certain kinds of massage on acupuncture pressure points or acupoints, with meditation intentions, meditation practices, with qigong forms and qigong practices, so that there's a holistic development of our experience of our energy. And when I say holistic, I'm referring to body, energy, heart, and mind. But we're also seeing how we cultivate that energetic development in various different forms of practice, whether it's the stillness of yin yoga, the moving of qigong, the applied massage of acupressure, the specific intentions of meditation. We'll see how all of these weave together to support the cultivation of our qi. And the first module really focused on yin yoga and the acupressure. That was what Those are the two main tools that I tried to highlight the most in that module. In this module, we're going to be emphasizing and highlighting the development of meditative awareness, or the refinement of our consciousness that we are practicing with. So there's a greater emphasis on meditation in this training, even though we'll still be using yin yoga, the acupressure, some vagal resets, the qigong. We'll be using these as a way to support the refinement of our awareness and meditation. But I say the reason why we place this module as number two, and if you're starting here, this is still a great place to start. The reason why I'm showcasing meditation and the awareness that it cultivates here is because in many ways, to really sense the energetic cultivation in your own practice, that process necessitates a fairly refined awareness. And if our awareness is not awake enough, is not sharp enough, is not clear enough, it's virtually impossible for many to sense and feel what's developing in their energetic cultivation. You know, a little anecdote might help explain this. In our Sangha classes, if you've been attending them, you know that both Terry and I have included some vagal nerve reset exercises from Stanley Rosenberg's book, Accessing the Healing Power of the Vagus Nerve. And that book was a recommendation to us from a Sangha member in Ireland. And when I wrote to Mary in Ireland and said, "Mary, thank you so much for this recommendation. It's, you know, really opened up another lens of looking at the dynamics of the body and mind. I find these exercises, of all the vagal exercises I've ever done, I find these, the ones in this book, particularly profound, and I sense a very profound impact on my energetic experience when I do them." And she wrote back and she said, "You know, that's great to hear. I recommend this to all my clients. I recommend these exercises to all my clients, but nobody does them. And they don't do them because they say, I don't notice anything. I don't feel it." And, you know, I'm not trying to say, "Oh, I'm me, Josh. I'm so sensitive. I can feel these things that nobody else can feel." I don't claim that as an attainment of of my ego, I see it as a function of practice. That with practice, our awareness becomes more refined and we can see more clearly what's going on. And so what I'm getting at is, and this comes back to sort of, I think I shared in a newsletter once, Terry years ago asked me after the first yin yoga training she hosted with me, she said, how can I improve my yin yoga teacher? How can I improve my own teaching? What's the best way to improve my teaching? And I just said, oh, that's easy. Meditate. Yes, it's important to have it. You have to have a yin yoga practice. That's not negotiable. You have to practice yin yoga. But the meditation practice, the practice of sitting still, that practice refines awareness and will open up your own understanding of what's going on in yin yoga and allow you to communicate from that direct experiential knowledge that much better. So chi cultivation is subtle. It's called subtle body cultivation. It's subtle body work. It's subtle. It's hard to perceive. And I know in my own journey, when I first started doing yoga, if I took a qigong class or a tai chi class, I didn't feel anything particular either. My awareness wasn't sensitive enough. So we're on a progression in our journey. We're on a progression from duller states of mind, and I'm not calling anyone a dullard, but moving from duller, less refined states of mind to more and more sensitive, refined states of consciousness, whereby our perception of cause and effect becomes clearer and clearer. And cause and effect here refers to what we're doing in our practice and what our practice is developing. The more you are able to develop that sensitivity to cause and effect, what I call karmaception, perception of karma, cause and effect, you will be able to develop and refine and creatively expand your practice to your own unique needs. And once you understand kind of the mechanisms of all that, you'll hopefully be able to communicate that to students, how students can cultivate and develop the practice that's unique to themselves. If you understand functional alignment and how everybody's bones are different and therefore everyone has to have different alignment considerations, think of that as the most obvious example of creative customization. That principle really applies all the way through how we cultivate our energy, how we cultivate and respond to conditions in our heart and mind. And the more we have, one word would be, the more we become empowered to have permission to make creative choices and play with the elements of practice, the more we improvise, the more you're going to, I think, find that your practice leads you to greater and greater experiences of at-one-ment, which is the direction we're moving. So this module just will say refining metal. This refers to the refinement of our awareness. This is a meditative emphasis of a training, or we'll be emphasizing meditation. In the spring, in the winter and spring of next year, Terry is going to take the lead more and focus on the embodied channeling of the energy that we're cultivating and exploring it through mobility, various mobility practices, and stability strength practices in two modules of their own, covering qigong mobility and more strength-based practices that work within this framework. And our final module, the fifth one, representing the element of fire, will focus on improvisation itself, how to practice like an improviser. You're getting a taste of it in each of the modules, but we want to put all of the pieces back together in the final module and talk about how to improvise and practice in that creative way. So now to look specifically at the dynamics of this module, I gave you an overview of attuning, atoning, and at-one-ing. We attune to what's happening. We atone for mistaken perceptions. We lead to more and more states of at-one-ment. I want to put it in context with the dynamics we've been exploring so far in qi cultivation in general. And there are four of these dynamics, namely gathering, where we focus on gathering our qi. We focused on channeling our qi through the body. We focused on sensing our qi flowing and what it's like when our qi settles. So these are the four broad dynamics: gathering, channeling, flowing, settling. And these four could be broken up into yin and yang or yang and yin categories, where gathering and channeling, I'll suggest, are the ones that we are actively participating with. We're actively doing. This is the yang side of qi cultivation, where we actively gather our energy, gather our resources, gather the dimensions of our experience, and then we channel it through intention. We channel that energy through intention. When our energy is gathered and channeled well, and we've cleared the channels, that's going to be a theme of this training. When we clear the channels, then the experience that we receive, the receptive developments, the receptive dynamics that we receive, are that we notice that our body and energy and mind flow better. There's less obstruction, there's less stagnation, there's a flowing dimension to ourselves, as well as a dimension that's settling, that's getting quieter and quieter, stiller and stiller, more and more at peace. So those are the four, the yin, the yang and yin of our, the sort of the introduction of our practice: gathering, channeling, flowing, and settling. And I just want to suggest that when those dynamics take root, and they take root through consistency of practice, and that's kind of the part that we're going to really encourage over and over again, to develop and sustain a consistent practice. If it's 10 minutes a day, some days 30 minutes or an hour some days, or multiple sessions of 10 minutes a day, but practicing consistently with these intentions, with these dynamics, the gathering process starts to mature into a unified process. So from gathering, from holding the intention to gather ourselves, that ripens into a more unified experience of where we're collected and our body, energy, and mind are unified. And that is more or less summarized with the term samadhi. What I have found, and this is something to test within your own experience, but what I have found is that the elements of the yin practice sublime, the massage, the yin yoga, the qigong, and the intentions of the specific forms of meditation, all of these together seem to bring my being and many of the students that I've worked with, bring people into states of samadhi that are more easily accessed than if you were, say, doing one thing alone. So for example, when I first went on meditation retreats, the only instruction I received to attain samadhi was to watch my breath at my nostrils. That was just the one tip. And there was nothing about yoga, there was nothing about energy, there was nothing about manipulating anything. It was just that one instruction to watch the breath at the nostrils. And it was hard. It was really hard. I had to sit through hours and hours and hours of great discomfort. And if you've gone on a retreat, you probably know this yourself. But I knew that it worked. It's been working for centuries, that just breath practice alone can produce in just unbelievably incredible states of unified experience. And while that's great, in everyday life, it's hard to devote 2 to 3, 4 hours of time to meditating all the time in your day. Not many people can sustain a 2 to 3 hour meditation practice a day. So, and I couldn't either. So my interest has been, how do we use yoga principles, principles of adjusting our posture, adjusting our energy through stimulation, through breathing? How do we adjust ourselves with yoga to support a more, you could say, the freeway path instead of the donkey or cow path, but the freeway path to samadhi? So this is something that I'll be interested in hearing from you about. It's like, what do you notice over time when you engage with the practices we're sharing? How does that support your ability to become and come into a gathered, unified state? Particularly in Buddhism, the function of samadhi, the reason why it's encouraged, the reason why it's emphasized, is that when the mind is unified in a specific way, our awareness becomes much clearer about what's occurring. You know, if you've ever read Lao Tzu and you imagine the pond, that when the wind stops and the surface of the pond becomes still, the surface of the water becomes like a mirror and can reflect the clarity of whatever's passing before it. So with this unified gathered experience, our minds just become sharper and clearer. So in the second week of the training, I'll be talking about how when we channel our spirit, our energy of consciousness, when we channel our heart spirit through the channels of mindfulness, we start to see and experience things more and more clearly. So clarification is the ripened, emergent, mature development of channeling our energy. Channeling, we take care of the channeling with intention, and over time it will slowly mature into clearer and clearer states of consciousness. As we get clear, what I have found too is essentially our energies, the awareness of our mind and heart flows to, so there's a flowing development that emerges, and it flows to the very things that need attention. Our gathered, clarified awareness flows now to the very things that need attention and specifically need healing. I've observed this in my own practice, whether it's on a retreat or, you know, just any kind of intensive period of practice. Usually there's a period where suddenly I'm something from my unconscious that I've repressed or suppressed or forgotten comes forward to be healed. It's no longer denied. And so this is the atoning phase that I was referring to earlier. It's really a healing phase. So the flowing chi that we'll look at and the flowing nature of our consciousness that we'll look at in the third week will emphasize, how does this flowing energy support the healing of our awareness, the healing of our heart, the healing of our psyche? And that, you might say, includes both personal dimensions of healing. So when I say personal, I say you might have a memory of something that happened to you. Like for me, I'll use an example. Earlier this year, or at the end of last year, I started to have memories of my time in high school, which I had totally forgotten about. And I had really blocked from my mind 3 years of getting bullied in the hall on a daily basis before and after lunch. And I was remembering how that bullying not only sort of destroyed my spleen's ability to digest, I couldn't eat lunch very well. I had no appetite, but I was also unable to concentrate and focus at all in class. And I really had a visceral memory of all that come back to me. That's an example of what I mean on a personal level. There might be some memory of something that's happened to us or something we've done it comes back on a personal level and is requiring healing. But I also mean the healing at the dimension of a more absolute metaphysical level, where our heart, the awakened heart, starts to become more in tune to, as the Buddhists describe, become attuned to the way things are. And they articulate that in that we tend to see and project permanency, satisfaction, and self, sense of essential self, on things, on experiences that are not permanent, that are not capable of satisfying, that are not compatible with the notion of a fixed, permanent, essential self. So this is more the deep contemplative dimension of healing, where the consciousness of our heart becomes in tune with the changing, unsatisfactory, and not selfless nature of all experience. Now, if you're like me, and if you're like many other people, hearing this in an introductory talk, like, wait, I'm going to have to reconcile myself to impermanence, unsatisfactoriness, and selflessness. This doesn't sound very inviting. And I understand that. I've said this before, but I'll mention it here. Buddhism is one of these philosophical traditions that refrains from speaking about liberation, not always, but it tends to refrain from speaking about freedom or awakening or liberation. It refrains from speaking about these things in the positive. It doesn't try to assert what they are, because asserting what they are becomes something that's articulated as a concept, and then the concept becomes its own obstruction to the direct experience of liberation. So Buddhism is like, and there are forms of Christian mysticism that do the same thing, as two examples, but it's a path, it's called a path of via negativa, via the negative, by saying what we aren't, by recognizing what we aren't, we fall into a direct experience of what we truly are. So even though it might sound on the surface like, oh, we're going to be seeing impermanence, we're going to be seeing unsatisfactoriness, we're going to be seeing selflessness, the experience of that is one of tremendous, like the direct experiential experience of that is one of tremendous joy, one of tremendous compassion and love and opening and vitalizing of our heart spirit. So we'll be coming to that as we progress. And then finally, through healing, I think these two are very intimately connected, that in my experience, it's only through healing these old wounds, either personal wounds or wounds of habituated perception, in healing these, then our intrinsic freedom, our intrinsic liberation, our intrinsic peace is able to be recognized. And that's the movement of settling, when our chi settles back into, our consciousness settles back into itself, which is very hard to do when our consciousness is bound up in trauma, bound up in wound, bound up in pain and hurt. So this is why I'm putting it on the other side of the healing dynamic. As we heal more, the more we'll start to access the ability to rest in the freedom of our own awareness, which is already here. It's just that it gets obscured or covered over by any number of habit patterns of being. So attunement, atonement, at one-ment is the direction we're moving. That's the broad theory, the broad picture of this course. If you're already a meditator, great. I hope you'll find that there are tools and ways of practicing here that you can integrate into your practice. If you're new to meditation, great, because I think this will set you up nicely for whatever direction you take your meditation. But even though I'll be speaking about mindfulness a lot as we get into the course, I want to just mention that if you've done a training before with me on meditation, you know I speak about yin meditation. Yin meditation is sort of my articulation of awareness practice that is open and creative, in that you're not necessarily trying to control your mind. You're not trying to do something specific with your attention. You're just letting your experience unfold naturally. And in yin meditation, what I was also trying to establish is a sense of safety by, from the very beginning, empowering practitioners to take responsibility for themselves. So that when in other words, you learn to play the edge, just like you learn to play the edge in a pose in yin yoga, in yin meditation, I really talk a lot about playing the edge with what's coming up, so that you have permission to move towards something, to experience something and stay with it, or you have permission to change or move your attention to shift onto something else. I think that is incredibly important to hear from the beginning, so that when we move more into the deep end of the pool, you have that familiarity with playing your edge and know how to take care of yourself. And in emphasizing yin meditation, and I, in some respects, have downplayed mindfulness, because I feel like without a familiarity with the broad dynamics that I was just discussing about yin meditation, mindfulness itself can get people into, and it got me into, some challenging, I would say re-traumatizing experiences. Whether it's sitting with physical pain and, you know, staying way long past where I should have been sitting at, you know, yin yoga has opened my body up so I can sit comfortably like this for periods of time. But on a retreat, sitting cross-legged just brought searing pain to my knee. And I followed the rules of the practice without moving, without flinching, watching the sensations as sensations. I got something out of that, but at a cost. You know, there's a wearing down on my meniscus now from that time. But it also, I would say, there was a harshness that I brought to my mindfulness practice, that when energy from past trauma came up, I really got flooded again. I would get flooded. And it really has having worked through, gone through my own process of psychotherapy for many years, and explored multiple approaches to mindfulness practice, I want to emphasize a very creative approach to it that honors playing your edge, but that does sharpen and bring your awareness to, as one of the authors I quote from in the first guide, brings your awareness to a heightened pitch that is able to really see clearly. And in my experience, that's been hard to do outside of a retreat. The retreat environment seems to be almost a necessary condition for my attention to get gathered and clarified enough to see very clearly. The innovations that I've been playing with, Terry and I have been playing with for the last several years, suggest to me that in emphasizing the energetic side of the practice, and emphasizing a collaborative dynamic with the energy of mindfulness, that the sharpening of awareness can, like samadhi, can actually come on board more quickly. I keep using this word quick. I consider myself in some respects a tantric practitioner, in that one of the hallmarks of tantra is to facilitate an awakening as fast as possible. And I don't mean to like push anyone along faster than they're ready to go themselves, but from my perspective, the faster we can experience the healing power of these practices, and the faster that we can feel that, start to feel, because it's an ongoing process, but the faster we can start to feel the liberative potential of these practices, that will be incredibly motivating for your commitment to your practice. I can't tell you how many times I've met a meditator who has been practicing for 10 or 20 years, and they say something like, yeah, my meditation is just a, you know, it's an okay experience, kind of fair to middling, mild irritations. My mind wanders quite a bit. And, you know, I don't, it's just, there's a sort of a plateau of blandness that the meditation feels like for them. And I know what that's like too. And it's its own kind of condition to learn how to work with. But I think anybody that cares, like many of you are teachers, and if you've been teaching for a long enough time, we're teachers, and a teacher practitioner is always looking for the most efficient, the safest, the most effective way to facilitate the deep intentions of these practices. And I, for example, I'm giving you a nod for my podcast coming out soon. Last week, I interviewed Joseph Goldstein on my show. And Joseph is probably one of the handful of people that has historically been involved in bringing insight meditation practice from Asia to Western shores. And he and I were talking about how I struggled a lot with a Burmese teacher, Upandita, that Joseph also studied with, very strict taskmaster of a teacher. And Joseph shared that while on retreat with Upandita, he noticed that his energy was getting too tight. He was driving, like getting too tense. And I knew this well. I had weeks and weeks of tight, tense, stressed out meditation mindfulness practice with Upandita. But Joseph said he, while working with Upandita on that retreat, he brought in a teaching he had received from a Tibetan teacher. And just applying that technique from, or that kind of reflection from the Tibetan teacher within the working of the Burmese practice with Upandita, integrating those two, he said, balanced things out immediately and brought, you know, the practice just started to unfold in its natural way with great clarity from there, very effortlessly. And so it's really in that spirit of, we know what the heart's intention of the practice is to connect, to tune, to atone, and to become at one. These broad themes. How do we avail ourselves of the tremendous richness of tradition that we can draw from? Sometimes I call it the spiritual buffet of the modern spiritual aspirant. But how do we avail ourselves of the great wisdom we have from the yoga tradition, from the Taoist tradition, from Chinese medicine, from Buddha Dharma and all the various lineages of Buddha Dharma? How do we avail ourselves from all of these wisdom traditions and find out what works best for ourselves? So that's sort of the overarching talk of the spirit of this course. I realize I've been talking more than I intended to, so I apologize for that. But I really am excited for this module because on the practice level, I feel that if you commit to practicing daily and applying the tools that we'll be sharing with you, that after a month, you're going to find that where you are in a month is a very different place from where you are now. This is our hope. Just in terms of your understanding and the subtlety and richness and appreciation you have for your practice. The course itself, I just want to say, is self-paced. So this will be an on-demand course going forward where people can take it whenever they want. As part of the launch and the development, we'd like to release it over 4 weeks and have a group with us like that you all are a part of. And we feel that that really builds a specialness to the process. Each week there will be sort of talks. I have 2 to 4 talks that I give. There's about 4 to 5 shorter tutorials, and there's 2 to 3 practices. And I really recommend reading through the guide that we put together. Go through the guide first. Listen to the talks, just to get a sense of the themes which are echoing what's in the guide. And then work with the tutorials and practices. I want to say put the majority of your time into the practices that are discussed in the tutorials and practices. And I want to suggest that you practice things individually and then practice putting some of the tools and the tutorials and practices together. I don't tell you exactly how to do that. I'm just suggesting see what it's like on their own, test things out on their own, and then start to blend them in your own way with the time that you have together and see how they work together. When we connect next Friday, we'll do another practice that will integrate all of them. And it's through practicing things individually and then seeing how that fits into a composite whole that I hope you'll start to see the subtler ways that these practices kind of inform and influence our qi cultivation. I think that's all I really want to say now. I'm going to take you through a basic practice and kind of connected to what I just said. This basic practice today is going to be an experiential practice that is really just yin yoga with the meditative themes I weave into it. I want you to see what yin yoga and the meditation is like on its own in terms of how it impacts your body's energy and the qualities of your consciousness. Next week, we're going to have more or less the same sequence with maybe a few alterations, but we'll see this more or less the same sequence, but we'll add in the acupuncture massage stimulation. We'll add in some vagal nerve resets. We'll add in some of the other elements of the yin practice sublime to this sort of basic practice to see what the difference is, to have research trials. We'll have a control arm, which is the basic yin practice, and we'll have the arm next week of the variables of the practice that we're putting together, that we're weaving together, and see how does that differ. And then each week after, we'll have a composite of all the tools that we're practicing in the yin practice sublime. But one of the things I also wanted to say before we start is I'd like you to have a journal, have a notebook or a journal with you as you go through this course, as you practice. And I really want to encourage you to make notes about what you're noticing. Like Terry often quotes one of her influential teachers, Ken Cohen, in his book on Qigong. He says, the most important book you'll ever read about your practice, or the most important book you'll ever read on practice, is your own journal of your practice.
Okay, I hope you enjoyed those reflections, and I hope that they, as always, sort of open up new avenues of exploration for you in your own practice and teaching. If you'd like to join us, I just want to say there's still time. If you want to join us for this training, the special October training in the wisdom of chi cultivation, check out a link in the show notes. Again, if you become a member of the Riverbird Sangha, you'll get 50% off on this training, saving, I think, about $185 or something like that. So it's a significant savings, and it really support your own teaching and practice of yin yoga. So we look forward to practicing with you. Until the next episode, stay safe, stay strong, keep practicing, and I look forward to seeing you soon. Take good care.